right, welcome to another Minovate Gang podcast, this time for Saturday, September 27th, 2008. And on the line with me is Garrick Van Buren.
Hello.
Phil Wilson.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you may be.
Yeah. And Graham Thickens, how you guys doing?
Yeah, greetings from Black River Falls, Wisconsin.
Fabulous.
Arrowhead Lodge.
Yeah, are you over there gambling, by the way?
No, I never touch the stuff. Oh. I only had to come along with my wife for her business. So I'm working in my hotel room all day today and watching the Gopher Ohio State game, of course.
Of course.
When you find a place to watch it, yeah.
That's right. We're going to give them a ball game, I'm convinced.
Good.
I'm a huge Gopher fan, so so I'm pumped up about that.
Well, you know, if Oregon could beat USC.
That's right. Absolutely. Oregon State, you mean.
Yeah, Oregon State. That's right.
Yep.
Well, and Ohio State's been having trouble in other games, too, so I think this is our year to give them a run. Anyhow.
All right. Hey, listen, let's get cranked up because the number one most pressing thing on everyone's mind is the potential economic meltdown that's occurring. And let's keep the focus on potential. But I have now been in six conversations with both people that are doing startups and established businesses, and then a guy that I know that's a project manager for a Fortune 100 company. And the discussion was around, you know, what is this, you know, is there any nice upside for internet and web startups and companies in this time of toil and trouble and desire for cost reduction, things like that?
The benefits of the fact that it's cheap and easy means you don't need to get a huge loan, which means you don't need to stand in line to get a huge loan.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The lesser need for startup funds of Web 2.0 companies puts them in a better position. But I also think there are a number of angles where startups can feel confident in this environment. And I actually continue to be quite confident that bootstrapped startups in particular are in as good a place as any. A lot of great companies are built in difficult economic times.
Well, you know, so far the lack of money, you know, the great thing about, startups in general is, you know, a lot of them aren't making money now. So really it's not going to make a lot of difference.
Right. So it doesn't make any difference to them.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I can speak from personal experience on that one.
Well, and what I was amazed by too was the, you know, when Tim O'Reilly gave the keynote at the Web 2.0 Expo in New York, and he, basically invited the audience of developers to do things other than build applications that are throwing sheep at your friends, and that a lot of conversation ensued about that. But what do you think, Garrick? Do you think he was onto something
about throwing sheep?
No, about building applications that are fluffy and perhaps of low value.
I'm so torn. I'm so torn on that. All the signs that I see point to that being a really good way to get a lot of funding. They're just not things that they don't excite me, and they don't seem like something that would be useful on the third day that you've got the application. But that's my perspective. But there's the guys from up in the guys from St. Cloud that did freeze.com. That seemed to work pretty well for them as well. And this ties into the whole App Store conversation too. There's been a lot of chatter around how until Apple changes their policies around that the only stuff that's going to be in there are these fluffy little things. But respect where it's due to do apps. So I think that, you know, there was a podcaster one, there's a couple of apps that have been kicked out fairly recently that, you know, they can't even talk about anymore. But so there's something there about these tiny little toy things. They're not exciting to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think, Garrick? or Cary Graham, sorry.
More serious apps coming into both the Apple iTunes App Store and other coming platforms, including Android, T-Mobile. What I think in particular, the sector that I like in this coming difficult time is SaaS. Online software hosted applications for serious business productivity kinds of things, I think is going to continue to shine in this environment. We're going to see reduced travel. We're going to see companies already, I'm sure, cutting their travel budgets. We're already hearing about hiring freezes. You know, the bigger the company, the more they start to panic on these kind of deals, you know, and there's no question this looks like the toughest environment right now since at least the 2001-2002 recession. And I guess I wouldn't want to be a company involved in travel right now. I think business travel is going to drop off considerably, but I think that puts collaborative solutions, Enterprise 3.0 kind of things, whatever you want to call them, you know, online hosted collaboration tools is a space that I would like going forward in this environment. And many of these SaaS companies, the public ones, are proving that they can do well in all economic times. I mean, companies are cutting back capital expenditures big time, but they're not going to cut back on the basics of communication and collaboration and all the business processes that can be accomplished with hosted solutions,
right,
particularly as you relate to small business.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that is borne out by that post that I did this past week when I went over and met with Jason Baker, who's the CTO at Visy. You know, the driver behind their growth is not only businesses that want to outsource their data centers, but, you know, we talked a lot about SaaS and cloud computing and all of that. And they're making major investments in this tier three data center, specifically because of the growth and because of that demand. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. I think it's, I think they're very smart folks, and I know Jason well, and I like what they're doing. I think they're a great local Minnesota play there, but from the data center side, of course. And there are some other, good SaaS plays, locally here. And we've talked about some of those. Some are startups, some are somewhat established already. And I think that's one sector that I think can feel confident going forward, maybe even more confident than they were 3, 4, 5, 6 months ago.
Well, and you know, the other thing is that the whole virtual communication, unified communication space is really taking off in a big way with, you know, web conferencing and video conferencing and all these things that are helping us to not necessarily have to get in a car or jump in an airplane to go to different places. And yet, as much as I personally have at my fingertips here with basically everything that anyone could ever need to be able to communicate virtually, I still want to be face-to-face. I mean, you can't replace, you know, now granted, if it's a relationship you already have established, all this stuff is wonderful for augmenting that, but it can't replace face-to-face. Not totally.
Well, yeah, I would certainly agree with that, but with the rise in virtual teams and in widely distributed teams, and I'm talking globally distributed, travel is just out of the question, particularly for a lot of startup firms. I mean, they don't have the travel budgets anyway. So I think it's the smaller firms, the more nimble ones, that are learning how to get around this need to be face to face all the time. You know, I think we're seeing improvements in the tools. There's no question about it. And travel budgets have always been tough for these kinds of firms. Other than the richly funded, you know, VC-funded firms in the Valley, maybe, you know, most of the startups I know are certainly not doing lavish travel. And
right,
won't be,
right.
And won't be. And they most certainly won't be in the coming environment either. And a lot of their large company brethren, like I say, will be cutting back drastically on that travel.
So is there a stronger play now than ever before to invest in, you know, broadband access and speed? I mean, we constantly are reminded how far behind we are in the world for broadband speeds and access. So, I mean, is there a play there that especially in difficult economic times, an investment there or a startup in that realm would be have a higher opportunity for success?
I would certainly say so.
Yeah, you know, and it's the big challenge with broadband though specifically is, the infrastructure cost to up that significantly. I mean, it's just in the time, you know, it's like John McCain last night on the debates talking about nuclear power plants and, you know, building, what did he say, 45? Nuclear power plants. And, you know, you look at the fact that today, if it was approved and the funding was there, 4 years from now, the thing would go online.
Mm-hmm.
So none of this, you know, drilling or nuclear power, none of this is a short-term fix. And it's the same thing with broadband. I will tell you, though, that I've got that DOCSIS 3 Comcast connection in our office with 50 megabit per second down and 5 megabit per second up.
Mm-hmm.
And it has materially changed our ability to use lots of different services. Because we used to have issues when we'd do a webinar and there'd be, somebody would be talking on the Vonage line or using Skype or uploading a gigantic file. And you'd end up, you could feel the performance degradation in whatever you were doing. You know, hiccups on the packets for the voice or the webinar wouldn't be as responsive. You're trying to move slides and so on. And so we'd end up telling people in the office if we were doing a webinar, okay, nobody use the connection now.
But what's the cost of having that higher speed? I mean, what are you paying to get that access and to get that high speed?
$199 a month.
So, I mean, that's a spendy proposition.
Yeah, but I mean, look at a T1.
Yeah,
you know what? T1's one
for a business expense. It's a no-brainer. From my perspective, I'm paying a little over $100 a month, and for my home office, and this is why I don't buy the comparison with other countries argument on broadband speeds. They don't have the geographic area to. And the lack of density to cover like we do. Like, it's super easy to get high speed. I mean, it's more profitable and easier and faster to bring high speed internet to Tokyo than it would be Minneapolis.
Why would the difference be that much, Eric? You explain that a little bit more.
Population density is geographic area to cover. To do it, so to each additional customer, the last mile in Tokyo is a lot shorter than the last mile in Minneapolis, right?
No question. Well, I mean, it's just you know, when people, I use that same exact analogy when people kind of lament and whine about our lack of really true broadband, like they have in Singapore or like they have in Korea or like they or South Korea and like they have in Japan, and then you think, okay, wait a minute now. If you compare countries, I mean, Germany's the size of Montana, and you know, Japan is the size of I think square footage of New Mexico or something. I mean, it's just you know, it's a factor and a magnitude that's dramatically lower. Mm-hmm. So it is easier to monetize in an infrastructure investment because you got so many people crammed into such a small area.
And the area you have to work in is much smaller.
Yeah. My biggest issue, though, is like even at home, I have 16 megabit per second down and 2 megabit per second up. And then Comcast has this power boost capability, which accelerates the beginning of an upload or a download. And it's wonderful because I do a lot of uploading of images, for example, of all my photos. I'm kind of a crappy amateur photographer, but at any rate, So bandwidth is key for me. And now with my son, for example, downloading all these anime YouTube videos, I'm getting concerned about that 250 gig cap. Not that I'm going to, exceed that immediately, but there aren't any other choices. I have no other choice. I have no other choice in the office for anything that's reasonable with high capacity broadband. And I'm more concerned about the lack of choice right now than I am the lack of speed.
Well, and
I'll agree with that.
You're kind of hoping Quest is going to be coming on here, aren't you, Steve? I mean, wasn't that the gist of your...
Yeah, well, Quest dropped a fiber line down Mitchell Road. So it goes by my office, it's just like a block and a half from my office. And then also, I live south on Mitchell Road, and it's the fiber line is probably, I don't know, maybe 1,000 feet. It terminates 1,000 feet from my house. So, but to drop fiber, to dig up and drop fiber right to the home, they're just not going to do it. That's just not their intent. They're at some box somewhere as a termination, and then they can run DSL lines off of that. Well, again, it's not competitive from a price standpoint, because I can get 768 up and 6 megabit per second down for $45-$50 bucks a month from Quest. Well, okay, so right now I'm paying 71 for internet access through Comcast at home. So you look at that delta, and why would I, choose a dramatically slower speed?
Right.
So it makes a big difference.
Well, you've got to have higher speed just to keep up that incredible collection of porn that you have going. So,
hey, come on. Now my dad listens to this podcast, so knock it off. Hey, let's segue.
I did have to comment, though, that I saw, did you see the piece yesterday, or I guess it was on Wednesday, that Minneapolis is spending $1 million and it's on its Wi-Fi network.
Put those poles in.
Put new poles in. Where are they getting these poles? And should we be selling poles?
Well, and I'm wondering how heavy are these damn cell phones?
Yeah, but exactly.
Poles,
what are we
strapping
up there?
What the hell
cattle?
Are they?
What are we? Are we strapping cattle to the thing, or what?
Yeah, I mean, what the? I mean, I don't understand that at all. But yeah, RT Ryback is that damn. He's going to be darned if that thing isn't going to get done and say he's got a success there. And I guess they're getting close to citywide build out now, and this 1 million more that they need for the damn poles.
Well, the thing is
10% over original budget, which isn't all that bad,
But they're putting in temporary poles until the new poles come in, and I'm thinking, oh my God, what are we doing here? No wonder we're spending so much money.
I've got to believe, they're talking about the fact that these are decorative poles, and I'm gonna bet that it's all about wind load, that they've got to have something, because that if the wind comes up, it'll just snap those things right off. So I'm assuming that's what it is.
Can't have those things blowing over onto those Lake of the Isles mansions, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, no.
That would not be good.
No. Hey, let's segue into talking about this company here locally. it's like, what's up with these guys, Best Buy? I mean, are they just like throwing these amazing things out into the marketplace? And it's like, where have they been?
I think it all revolves around Garrick Van Buren. I really believe that.
Yeah,
that's right. Garrick did a little gig over there, didn't you, Garrick?
Yeah. One of the projects I'm working on with them launched this week, so that was nice to see that get out the door.
So you're going to be hanging around the hub a little bit more. Is that the deal, or is it you've already done?
At this point, I will be in and out of the hub between now and the beginning of next year. So,
wonderful. Congratulations.
Yeah. I am so impressed and just generally giddy when I get over there. I haven't seen some of you I've mentioned this before too. The amount of buzz and just cool stuff happening down on that corner of 35 and 494 just stuns me. There's so many smart people doing so many cool things, and from a company that a year ago I wouldn't have even you would have told me they'd be doing this stuff in a year or two, I would have been like, no, you're kidding. But just fantastic work from what I see.
Well, you know, I had a chance last week to spend some time there as well, and had wonderful chance to meet with some great folks. And I would agree with you, Eric. You know, it's not what you would expect from the big box store. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't expect that kind of energy, enthusiasm, and just the willingness to throw stuff against the wall and see what sticks. You know, whether it's I spent time speaking with, you know, guys like Gary Culling and Steve Bent, and they are, you know, doing some great things. You know, they've got it all started with Blue Shirt Nation, but now they've got Gift Tag, and our friend Cam Gross is working on Bazaar, which is a sort of an extension of Blue Shirt Nation. And then I just saw the fact that they launched Remix. You know, there's a ton of stuff going on there, and it's an amazing thing. It really is.
Well, they've always been about innovation. I mean, you know, Robert Stevens, the founder of Geek Squad, who's been with Best Buy now since his firm was acquired, what, 5-6 years ago even. He talks about, you know, $500 ideas. That's the kind of stuff he's pushing, you know. Everybody out there iterating and coming up with ideas and testing them, and he's trying to instill, and he's not alone, a real intrapreneurial environment over there, and there's no question they have a, you know, they've had a long relation or long tradition of doing that. I only hope that in the coming difficult times that they can keep it up. And that, you know, if we're going to have a slow holiday season, as so many are talking, that, you know, that budgets don't start getting cut at Best Buy, I think that would be a shame.
Well, I think Best Buy really has a good grasp on what their future looks like and where they need to start investing. You know, there's very strong, they launched the musical instruments stores or departments in some of their stores. They're looking at that. I had a chance to spend some time with Julie Owen, who's senior VP over at Digital Entertainment there. And was it Sev Maynard? They're all thinking long term, and that's incredible to see. And I think that they have to. They know that they have to think long term to avoid those tough times.
Well, they have a saying over there, and Robert Stevens speaks eloquently to this, is that they're always running scared. They know there's always somebody out there that'll eat their lunch, and they've been this way for actually many years. You know, Best Buy almost went under in the mid-90s, and the founder, Richard Schultz, and Brad Anderson, now CEO, lived through that time, and they know what it's like to be at a near-death experience, and they make sure no one ever forgets that.
But I think that's been around forever. I remember hearing Gates talk about that same feeling, that waking up in the cold sweat, just knowing somebody's out there, just at the same time waiting to kick your butt.
Yeah, but with Best Buy, they've managed to keep that alive, and that's why they love all this new, looking at new innovation all the time and listening to the marketplace and listening to the employees, and that's all behind a lot of this social networking stuff, you know.
Well, then they also did that prediction market, Tag Trade.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a quote, because we were going to talk about this today. I pulled this quote from that Wall Street Journal article about Best Buy taps the prediction market. And Brad Anderson, the CEO, said this. He said, narrowing the gap between management and workers helps to make his Richfield, Minnesota-based company more nimble and responsive to customers while boosting sales and profits.
Yep.
So what I look at is that, you know, by doing what they're doing, which is being in the game, being on the field, figuring out what the plays are, calling audibles, you know, doing all that stuff using football metaphors, is that they're going to figure out how to ensure that they're connected with this next big wave of people that are going to be really seeking devices and cameras. And, you know, they're the ones who are going to buy Wi-Fi enabled cameras because they can easily send video and photos up, and they're going to be looking for, you know, better ways to communicate, better ways to connect with their friends and so on and so forth. And to really understand what's happening is, if you're not in the game and you're not listening, you're not going to hear it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, and there's going to be some real interesting things coming from Best Buy, and I'm privy to a lot of this that I can't even talk about. But one thing I'll bring up, because I don't have any particular insight into this, is the Napster acquisition. And, you know, this is intriguing to me, because what is this going to end up becoming? A content delivery the platform for these guys, or what? I mean, I like to think they have some grand plan strategy, but of course they're not talking about it yet, and the deal won't close till maybe the fourth quarter here, I'm sure, the end of the year maybe. But that's another fascinating thing going on over there. And like you say, there's just tons of stuff going on over there at the headquarters that we all don't know about, but we're starting to pick up pieces of it. And there's going to be more stuff coming here soon. And the funnest thing, though, is that Barry Judge, the CMO, is Twittering. I just think that's tremendous. And Steve, wasn't that fun at the social media breakfast last week? He wasn't in the room. I'm sure he had meetings going upstairs. He didn't, you know, his schedule is booked way out. He couldn't make it to that thing. But he was Twittering with us live while the 80 of us or whatever were in, on the first floor in the meeting room in our social media breakfast. And we're exchanging thoughts back and forth with the CMO. So kudos to him for diving in, you know, and he's not the only senior exec over there who's diving into that.
Yep. Well, to make sure that this isn't just ending on a note of we're sitting here waving pom poms about Best Buy, because when I did that,
for you, it's the skirt really that makes the whole ensemble, yeah. Steve.
Yeah, you silly. Mm-hmm. But when I did that post about Best Buy acquiring Napster, and I talked about the acquisition of Speakeasy, which the only way I can term it is they're the geek squad of ISPs. I mean, these guys get it. They've got gamers packages, connectivity packages, all sorts of stuff. And then they made a minority investment in that video sharing company, Madeo, and then bought a huge stake in the European group called Carphone Warehouse. Mm-hmm. Phil, you and I talked about this, but when you walk into, as I do often, the Eden Prairie Best Buy store, which has turned out to be kind of a corporate showcase store, they bring a lot of out of town visitors in there and so forth. You walk in there, and the first thing you see is row after row of CDs and row after row of movies, mm-hmm. and it doesn't take any rocket scientist or somebody who's a futurist to know that at some point, whether it's a year, 3 years, or 5 years from now, that all that floor space is going to have to be devoted to something else. And clearly they're seeing that they've got to strategically be in a place where they can deliver stuff digitally and do so in a materially different way.
Well, I don't want to tip a hand here, but two words fill that space. Two words. Swimming pools. I'm sure of it.
That's right. That's right.
They'll be selling hot tubs in Best Buy.
No, I just think swimming pools. Hey, they can do swimming lessons. It'll be great.
Well, you know what? I didn't have a whole lot of topics for today, and I think part of it is, you know, I know for me personally, I'm kind of a deer in the headlights with respect to what's going on with the economy and watching my net worth go in the wrong direction, but wondering if you guys have anything else that you want to address today.
I would just say to all those startups out there, hang in there. Tough times make for tough people and make for good companies. And don't take your eyes off the ball. Stay focused. Adjust. Good luck if you're in the financial services industry, or like I said before, maybe the travel industry. I don't know. You know, I wouldn't want to be in either of those spaces. But I think there's tons of opportunity, and internet and Web 2.0 and Web 3.0 and Enterprise 3.0 collaboration is huge and only going to get bigger. So,
yeah.
Onward and upward.
Upcoming this week, we should probably just touch base. The MEMA summit is scheduled for, I believe, Wednesday. Is that right, Garrick? Yep. Are you going to be at that?
There is also the Overflow Unsummit.
The Unsummit, so which is where I'll be.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll probably make an appearance there at some point during the day as well. That one, I got to say, if there's anything about the popularity of the MEMA summit, I wrote this at Minteractive. The popularity getting so huge that people can't get in. It's that people like Don Ball pick up the ball and start the Young Conference for it. So.
Yeah, well, and I think that should be a lot of fun. I know, Gary, I think you're going to be doing something there and have some really good discussions. And I was really surprised to see how many people were there already signed up. So I think it'll be a great time. And we could probably put some information on where that is, both, on the website or whatever in the show notes.
Yeah, they got a location now?
Yes, they do. And I'm drawing a blank as to where.
Yeah, let me know.
But yes, I'll make sure that I get that so we get it up on the website. And I apologize to Don. I'm sorry I'm drawing a blank as to where it is. But yes,
well,
there is.
Just go to unsummit.org and read about it.
That's right.
I'll be at the summit itself, by the way. I was one of those people who did register in time. And so I'll be at the event the night before on the 30th at the Walker. And then I'll be at the summit all day Wednesday. And then at the Gage Microsoft happy hour the night of the first, which is open to everybody, including the Unsummit folks.
Cool.
I think I'm looking at the unsummit.org site and they're meeting at the local, and sure. I think they're going to suck more people from the summit than I think they were planning to. Everyone's going to just have Jamison all day at the local.
Works for me.
No, I think that was Graham. Graham, did you have some closing thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to say, where is the local? I don't know.
Downtown Minneapolis, right there on Nicolette.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
Hey, take care, guys.
Yep. Peace out. Yeah.